true follower of Islam, a true follower of Prophet and Ahlul Bayt, shares bounties and blessings with others for the sake of Allah only. He doesn't do it for the worldly pleasures, for the respect. While all of those things may be there, they don't do it to feel good about it. They do it only for the sake of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And this is what the beauty of Islam is. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parstoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
In the limelight.
After 5 years, the biggest casualties of Brexit are in plain sight. Integrity and decency in public life are crumbling, says Will Hutton, writer, in an article published under the heading, Case for Brexit was built on lies. 5 years later, the CET is routine in UK politics. Stay tuned for more. After 5 years, the biggest casualties of Brexit are in plain sight. Integrity and decency in public life are crumbling. Because so much of the case for Brexit is false, the political modus operandi of the Brexiters now dominating the UK political culture has become a refusal to accept responsibility for mistakes, overclaiming, deceit, and sometimes outright lies to justify the unjustifiable. Once the electorate can no longer trust what they're told, democratic debate is denied. People have been robbed of a core right of citizenship. It is a form of coup, but with a cloud of nationalist hyperbole disguising the threat to parliamentary democracy. To hold power or challenge it in a democracy requires continual argument and discussion, the precondition of which is a commitment to truth-telling and assured acceptance of facts, however differently they may be interpreted. Trash those preconditions, and we inevitably slide into a universe of division and distrust impervious to rational argument. The British are all belittled. It is as the Brexit right once. Brexit has given it a cause and a political coalition that leaves it more firmly in control of power than at any time since peak Thatcherism. It is not only partisan right-wing policies, from the impending assault on public service broadcasting to the criminal failure to provide additional teaching to compensate for COVID-induced teaching losses. It is the gerrymandering that favors the Tory interest. Voter suppression, rendering the Electoral Commission even more toothless. Ensuring all trustees and chairs of public bodies are conservative. Weakening judicial review. Abolishing the Fixed-Term Parliaments Act. eliminating any proportionately in the voting system for mayors, not accepting the doctrine of ministerial accountability, and all couched in a language of defiant nationalism so that critics can be dismissed as un-British friends of the foreigner and outriders for wokedom. This entire edifice is the consequence of Brexit being indefensible in rational terms, so that even boasts of success rest on presentational legendary main morphing into deceit. Thus, last week, the unpersuasive list offered by Boris Johnson in favor of Brexit, it comprised 8 free ports permissible within the EU and whose limited success is created by diverting economic activity from elsewhere rather than creating activity. A successful vaccine program impossible within the EU. Since June 1st, Germany, France, and Italy's 7-day average vaccination rates have exceeded Britain's. Control of borders. Numbers of EU immigrants have fallen while numbers of non-EU immigrants have risen, so that overall immigration is barely changed. Investment in jobs being unlocked. To the extent the government has made any such investment, it would never have been prevented by the EU. Finally, achieving the Australian trade deal, under which Australian exports to Britain will rise 6 times more than British exports to Australia. In truth, the gains are either non-existent or paltry. The losses, on the other hand, are massive, real, and not addressed by ministers. British trade with the EU has fallen by a fifth in the first 3 months of 2021, a drop normally associated with an economic slump. The International Barons of Private Equity Circle, the stricken firms in an orgy of asset stripping. British have fallen from first to fifth in the ranking of states winning EU scientific research funding. Culminatively, exports of services are now more than £100 billion below what pre-Brexit trends suggested. Farmers are losing 25% of their basic EU grant this year and tremble for their viability. The prospects of Irish reunification have never looked so likely. UK relations with the EU are immersed with hostility and distrust. A new concert of powers to govern the world, the US, EU, India, China, Russia, and Japan, is discussed in Washington, a list that conspicuously does not include global Britain. Small wonder that Johnson and the Conservative Party want to see Brexit as a done deal, from which there is no going back. We have that lemon dry, he told the Atlantic magazine. To acknowledge these weaknesses would delegitimize the whole enterprise. Thus, further deceit compounds the original deceit, sin on sin. No government minister can acknowledge, for example, the astonishing asymmetry of the Australian trade deal and its disproportionate advantage to Australia, or the concessions made on meat standards. Johnson and the Brexit minister, Lord Frost, portray the frictions in trade between Northern Ireland and mainland Britain as a surprise, even though Johnson resigned over Theresa May's backstop, designed to avoid them. The dissimulations don't wash. There are some signs that the public is noticing. Today's Observer opinion poll shows 43% now disapprove of the government handling of Brexit, up 4% since January. Only 33% approve, down 3%. perhaps even more surprising given the paucity of public argument in favor of the EU, 27% would rejoin against 22% who want more distance, while another 22% favor a stronger relationship. Moreover, suspicions that the government is not straight with the country are spreading beyond the argument over the EU. Journalist Peter Auburn argues in his remarkable short book, The Assault on Truth, that the culture of truth abuse and avoidance of responsibility are part and parcel of the entire approach of Johnson and his government, from the referendum campaign to the management of COVID, aided and abetted by disgracefully compliant media. Yet Brexit is at the heart of this struggle over truth and integrity. The lies that gave birth to it led to Johnson's rise to the prime ministership. It is this recognition propelling the rapid growth in membership of pro-European campaigning groups, such as the European Movement and Grassroots for Europe. Citizens, despairing of a Labour Party that refuses to do battle on the central fact of British politics, are doing what they can to challenge the Brexit lie. They are acting to preserve integrity. After all, big lies, whether communism or imperialism, collapse in the end. But such collapses need citizens to act.
Today. Going on to 15, Press TV will be celebrating its 14th anniversary, July the 8th, under not-so-celebratory circumstances. On June the 22nd, 2021, the US seized the station's web domain. That's a reminder of how we have to be on our toes, not to avoid a fall, but to quickly control damage. Over 30 outlets linked to the anti-Israel resistance movement were shut down, although it's not that easy to block country domains, as that'll arouse international objection to undermining country sovereignty. So the US effort will have been a wasted one. Iran just continued with its .ir domain. So feel free to search our content on PressTV.ir. Not now, because I'm here now to demonstrate PressTV's challenges as well as its pros and cons. On the matter of finding ways around U.S. hindrance, our guest offers his insight. Dr. Massoudi is faculty chief at Surrey University. An old hand in the world of media, he offers insight into the why of actions taken, say, by the U.S.
Well, the first thing is that we anticipate what they want to do. When this foresight is there, we can take immediate action in case it happens. Fortunately, there are two important facets to the cyber world. The first is that there is a huge amount of information in circulation, and control, censorship, and other actions that would stop that flow aren't feasible. But they can monitor our data, and because there is no center to the internet, there is no command, and that's what enables us to relaunch our websites thanks to our technical and IT capabilities.
Excuses for taking Press TV off air or blocking it out of cyberspace traditionally tend to be feeble. The U.S. Justice Department said 33 of the seized websites were used by the Iranian Islamic Radio and Television Union, which was singled out by the U.S. government last October for what officials described as efforts to spread disinformation and sow discord among American voters ahead of the 2020 presidential election. Notices on the domains said the websites were seized as part of law enforcement action by the Bureau of Industry and Security, Office of Export Enforcement, which is part of the U.S. Department of Commerce, and the Federal Bureau of Investigation. One would naturally conclude the U.S.'s motives had nothing to do with Iran having possibly broken media regulations, but were rather an extension of U.S. sanctions against this country, economic sanctions. I asked how it is that the supposed defender of freedom of expression just gets to block Press TV's coverage at will.
Behind Western democracy, the interests of multinational corporations are hidden. The European and American media basically rely on large multinational corporations. Some of these companies, for example, also produce home appliances. Unfortunately, I've heard recently that the head of the Home Appliances Union had complained that 400 containers of the devices were being brought into the country, many of which were products made by the same multinational companies that are shutting down our national television and radio. Their interest lies in influencing Iran's booming market and selling their products here.
Press TV was far from alone this time. Some other websites seized were Al Alam newscasters, as well as Al Masira TV of Yemen. Also seized were Palestine Al Yom, a Palestinian-directed broadcaster, Karbala TV, the official television of the Imam Hussein Shrine in the holy Iraqi city of Karbala, Iraqi Afaq TV, Asia TV, and Al-Naim TV satellite television channels, as well as Naba TV, which reports the latest stories about Saudi Arabia and other Persian Gulf countries, as well as Bahrain's Lualua TV, a channel run by opposition groups with offices in London and Beirut. Mr. Abedini is a high-up figure in Iran's media world and a media analyst worth hearing out.
We are not too surprised that the system of domination removes any voices that aren't theirs. If it accepts the voices to be heard, it would face a contradiction. That's because it's been portraying a picture of other nations that was a lie, and then its people would question them as to why they hadn't been showing them the facts. If it suppresses those voices, it would violate the principles of liberal democracy. But they've gone for the latter because they think it benefits them more.
Press TV's past experiences of interference with its flow of speech span a decade. On 20th January 2012, the channel's license to broadcast in the UK was revoked by Ofcom, the UK's media regulator. This was on the grounds that the company's editorial content and control came from Tehran. Press TV and its partners argued. London offices of CNN International, Bloomberg, and Al Jazeera all ultimately answer editorially to bosses in Atlanta, New York, and Doha. Also, if real editorial control of the station was from Tehran and that was a problem, it would have been a problem also when the Ofcom license was first granted. Tehran maintained the Ofcom decision was a clear instance of censorship, and Press TV continued to broadcast in the UK via its YouTube and Facebook pages. Now, logic aside, here's some juicy information that will uncover the UK's ulterior motive. Courtesy of WikiLeaks, it came to light that 2 years earlier, the British government was reportedly planning to strike a blow at Press TV. That would be in 2010. This would be in retaliation for the blocking of Western satellite channels by Tehran, as Jeffrey Alderman put it. A proud Zionist, as he calls himself, he appeared on Press TV panel discussions and bore witness. I have never been censored, nor has the company ever made the slightest attempt to get me to modify a particular view. Now, this voice of balance has been silenced, meaning Press TV.
We're all familiar with the contradictions within the liberal democracy. People in London used to have access to your channel, Press TV, and the number of viewers there were growing fast. They couldn't tolerate this growing number of viewers and had to stop it by revoking the channel's permit on the basis of falsehood over some alleged complaint of a journalist who's detained in Iran, which of course doesn't have anything to do with that. It doesn't come as a surprise then. They try to impose limitations on any of our media that are influential around the world.
In early April 2012, the Munich-based media regulator BLM announced it was removing Press TV from the SES Astra satellite for having no license to broadcast in Europe. But Press TV produced documents showing it could broadcast under German law. And Munich's administrative court announced on June the 15th, 2012, that the ban was illegal. The ban, in other words, was based on false premises, no subjective misjudgment even.
The same goes for freedom of expression. They let bomb-making tutorials for Iranians be circulated, but don't accept the smallest move that would go against liberal democratic thoughts and immediately take the page down. They don't allow the photo of General Qasem Soleimani to be published, but there are tens of accounts belonging to Al-Qaeda and Daesh. How can they explain this contradiction?
The silencing trend went on again in 2012 with Eutelsat and Asiasat. Iran survived by striking deals with smaller companies in other countries. Then in 2012, Intelsat took Press TV off air along with several other Iranian channels for fear of U.S. sanctions. Years later, from 2019, Press TV has found itself on and off social media platforms more than once a year even. In April 2019, Press TV reported that Google blocked its access, along with Hispan TV, its Spanish-language sister channel, without prior notice, citing violation of policies without explanation. No explanation came as no surprise to Press TV, of course, as it believed it had not violated any of Google's listed policies. Press TV accused Google of censorship, as Google owns YouTube. Dr. Sepanji joined us by Skype. It was worth establishing even an online connection to hear his analytical views.
Countries have a set of domestic regulations that can be used for that purpose. There are international unions that we can use to make complaint. Most importantly, the ITU, which belongs to the United Nations, but that requires a team of experts who know the language of international law, are familiar with the legal frameworks and international conventions. All's not lost. We're dealing with private companies. We've seen what happens to private companies such as Google and Microsoft in Europe. Courts issue rulings that the companies are obliged to accept them and respect public opinion, protect privacy, and deliver the message to the audience.
Come January 2020, YouTube deleted the Press TV UK channel, which hosted hundreds of videos and boasted 28,000 subscribers. That was days after the US killing of Iran's top military leader, Qasem Soleimani, which suggests the real motive behind censoring Iran is to silence its inconvenient truths. Dr. Dabiri Meh shares his views with us as a media analyst with a bird's eye view as he reviews all Iran's global media content.
I think Press TV successfully represented the demands, tendencies, and alternative thoughts in the United States concerning the U.S. government and its politicians in specific periods. The American society is a huge pluralistic entity compared to the government, but the American media, like CNN, have reduced that huge society to the administration, the president, or the White House, as if they are the voices of the pluralistic American society. But that couldn't be further from the truth. There are numerous unheard voices in the US about a variety of different topics. In my opinion, Press TV has been very successful in representing them, attracting a large audience.
Come from 2021 and the sixth and seventh rounds of the Vienna talks to revive the nuclear deal, Iran's PressTV's.com domain, among others, was seized by the U.S. This is while the talks are basically to clear the air between Iran and the U.S. to get U.S. sanctions lifted off this country and the deal going. But is it a surprise for once?
This goes back to the history of American diplomacy and the techniques they use in their negotiations. When they want to clinch a deal, contrary to popular belief, they tend to maximize pressure to grant the smallest concession and gain the biggest advantage. Iran isn't the only country targeted by this strategy.
Press TV reserves its right to pursue the case legally via domestic and international channels while switching to local domains in different countries it covers. The channel released a statement promising to carry on as the voice of the voiceless, sanctions or otherwise. It called the U.S. seizure an act of terror against the world's public opinion and media robbery and dictatorship. This is while taking the ban also as a compliment, given it sees Press TV's accurate, timely, and voluminous information dissemination on Palestinian efforts against Israeli usurpers and the latest war they imposed on Palestine as cause for this blocking of the web domain. Press TV and independent media supportive of the resistance are paying for continual failures the U.S. and its allied regimes have experienced in the field, the statement continued. Also, to continue physically, there are requisites, the most important being to keep the channel's heart beating, or hearts beating rather, albeit with a hiccup in the beat. But before taking a closer look at the makeup of Press TV, let's see what other media outlets have to say. And here it is in words. Wired points to how a U.S. seizure of websites poses a danger beyond today. The U.S. takedown of Iranian media sites extends a thorny precedent. Free speech advocates raised concerns after the Justice Department seized more than 30 domains this week. It's really unclear why the U.S. government acted on these particular sites and why now, or what their standard is for intervention, says Evelyn Dureck, a research scholar at Columbia University's Knight First Amendment Institute and a lecturer at Harvard Law School. One of the core principles of free speech rights is that government restrictions on speech should be transparent and justified, and that's not happening as much as it should. The contrast between how we talk about foreign disinformation and domestic disinformation in this space is really stark, she says. Foreign disinformation gets talked about with really militarized language, while domestic disinformation gets talked about in the language of speech rights. The reason this matters is that it means we don't demand the same level of transparency, justification, or oversight of enforcement measures when it comes to foreign speech. It's part of a wider trend since Trump's maximum pressure sanctions on Iran were implemented, by taking down some Iranian sites by the Department of Justice and Treasury, as well as platforms like Twitter and Instagram taking down some users, says Narges Bajorli, an assistant professor of Middle East Studies at Johns Hopkins University's School of Advanced International Studies. News Talkit explains the distrust Americans have in the media. Americans' trust in media is lowest in the free world. The public will forgive the honest mistake. Those who seem to specialize in flitting around the edges of the truth have earned a distinction. A new report shows that U.S. trust in the news media is the lowest in the free world. According to the Patriot Post, new data from Reuters' latest digital news report shows the degree to which Americans don't trust the MSM, at least in relation to people in the rest of the world, the U.S. comes in dead last, ranking 46th out of 46. The mainstream media has denied their bias for years, and the viewing public became less trusting and more suspicious when what the MSM served up didn't square up with what the public knew to be true. That limited trust has eroded even further now that the media makes virtually no attempt to disguise its own partisanship. In other words, Americans don't trust the media because the media isn't trustworthy. We've got Tasnim News quoting Hassan Nasrallah. Hezbollah chief slams U.S. seizure of resistance websites. The Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah said the United States' recent seizure of website domains tied to pro-resistance media exposed Washington's false claims about democracy and freedom of speech. In a televised speech on Friday, June the 25th, Saif Hassan Nasrallah said these outlets play an important role in supporting the Palestinian cause against Israeli occupation and take a stand against U.S. domination, sedition, and takfiris. That would be it for this segment, but do stay on. Thing is, Western bans aside, National TV's World Service hasn't been receiving its funding necessary for paying satellite service providers and for other payments. But as it turns out, enough of the station believes in its mission more than the money it gets to pass round. And this is a fall that should pass, given objection and at times action across the board by different guilds and groups, such as professors and MPs, objecting to budget cuts.
Unfortunately, problems concerning logistics, finance, and support for overseas and international networks are due to a lack of understanding of media diplomacy, national information transfer, and branding on the international stage. We are suffering from this in our country. I'm not trying to say that we don't have people who can understand this, but they are a minority. Those who are tasked with decision-making, allocating budget, and even media and communications planning in the country don't have a clear understanding of these facts. They think these are liabilities, while they need to know that they are indeed investments.
And so the channel's hearts are at work. Those would be the newsroom and correspondence office, or Tehran Bureau. There's the website as backup with farther reach given its greater accessibility, and the programs department, which holds it all up like a backbone with in-depth analyses of hard news topics. TV, of course, is a team effort and joint enterprise between the technical, academic, and literary for a balanced political message to be aired and shared. Let's not forget foreign correspondents complementing the Tehran Bureau, etc., etc. There's so many people doing so much. Press TV has had a clear vision and mission from the start, and with the emergence of media diplomacy as a determining factor in shaping minds, it cannot abort now.
In general, I think we have been successful in planning for such channels, in identifying the audience and delivering the message to the target audience. There are some reasons for the shortcomings, including their removal from the satellite channels list or social media platforms over issues related to the sanctions, and so on. In my opinion, if these hurdles didn't exist, our overseas networks, which have been operating for several years, would be even more successful.
Since 9/11, Western bias has divided the media into two camps, purported Press TV at its onset, the Western camp and the one supporting extremists and Al-Qaeda. Press TV came about during the US's round of retaliatory attacks on regional countries, Afghanistan, then Iraq, because Iran was automatically being encircled by US forces while its peaceful nuclear program was coming under attack. So it set out to give a second eye to Western audiences to promote an Iranian perspective of the world based on truths on the ground in West Asia and America specifically.
In my opinion, the English language media in Iran have two chapters on history. One coming before the overseas networks and specifically the Press TV network, and one after it. Before that, their reach was very limited. They mostly targeted Tehran-based embassies and businessmen staying in hotels or those who visited Iran. That was a very limited reach. But the overseas channels started to snap Iran's image on the global stage. First kicked off by English-speaking Sahar channel and later continued by Press TV.
If the U.S. removes Iran's voice from satellite channels and social media, how does it deal with the voices of the people of China, Russia, Venezuela, Bolivia, Lebanon, Iraq, Syria, and others? Even if it suppresses all those voices, what would it do to the people of the U.S. who are saying, "I can't breathe"? How will it silence that voice unless it literally kneels down on the necks of every single person and suffocates them to silence the voices? Unless it makes the impossible move, it seems that the voices will continue to be heard.
It's not just thwarting Western media and political propaganda away from Iran by unveiling what was actually a US-allied occupation of the Middle East or West Asia. but sounding the concerns of the voiceless everywhere. Press TV prides itself for having given Iraqis a voice in objecting to a U.S. occupation and presence in their country, for example. Launched in 2007 as Iran's first 24/7 international English-language news channel, Press TV presents world news round the clock, as well as some 15 programs made here in Tehran alone and documentaries, never mind chat shows by its London company and news coming in faster and more accurately from its foreign bureaus. 5 bureaus in some of the world's most important cities, London, Beirut, Kabul, Damascus, and Baghdad, help Press TV in this mission, as well as covering not just the most important stories, but also the most underreported stories.
I think these networks can have a wider international presence. They can use independent experts from around the world. There is no denying that the correspondents at the scene of the incidents are doing fine. They're using local and international reporters, but it's still not enough. I think they need to increase their potential by 30-40%. Of course, interactions with the world's greatest channels could also prove useful, especially in terms of the training of human resources and interacting with different networks around the world and being present at the scene of events.
Press TV personnel have given their lives in efforts to find out and or air the truth. Maya Nasir, Syed Farhad Taqaddusi, Habibullah Husseinzadeh, and Serena Shim made the sacrifice in revealing what is withheld from a global audience. And this news network continues to operate round the clock in spite of sanctions and blocks and loss of human resources. Thanks for being with us. Till next week. Bye.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
New York prosecutors may soon bring indictment against Trump Organization tied to perks for top executives, says David Smith, author, in an article published under the heading, Trump in Financial and Political Danger as Company Faces Possible Criminal Charges. Stay tuned for more. Donald Trump is facing a potentially crippling financial and political blow as state prosecutors consider filing criminal charges against his family business recently. Prosecutors in New York could soon bring an indictment against the Trump Organization related to the taxation of lucrative perks that it gave to top executives, such as use of apartments, cars, and school tuition. The 45th president is not expected to be personally charged, but the legal drama could bankrupt his company by damaging his relationships with banks and other business partners, as well as clouding his political comeback. Ron Fischetti, a lawyer for the Trump Organization, held a virtual meeting with prosecutors recently for about 90 minutes in an effort to dissuade them from pursuing criminal charges against the company. The charges are absolutely outrageous and unprecedented. If needed, the charges are filed, Fischetti told the Associated Press recently, adding, this is just to get back at Donald Trump. We are going to plead not guilty and we will make a motion to dismiss. Fischetti and his colleagues had to make their final arguments against charges being brought, according to a report in the Washington Post. The long-running investigation by Cyrus Vance, the Manhattan district attorney, began after Trump's former lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, paid hush money ahead of the 2016 presidential election to two women who alleged that they had sexual encounters with Trump. Trump denies the claim, however. There is now a particular focus on Alan Weisselberg, 73, the longtime chief financial officer of the Trump Organization, the private real estate conglomerate. Prosecutors are examining his son Barry's use of a Trump apartment at little or no cost, cars leased for the family, and tuition payments made to a school attended by Weisselberg's grandchildren. Such gifts and perks are worth tens or hundreds of thousands of dollars. If the Weisselberg failed to account properly for that money on tax returns and other financial filings, they could be in legal jeopardy. But Fischetti insists that any criminal charges based on fringe benefits would represent a speculative break from precedent. We looked back 100 years of cases, and we haven't found one in which an employee has been indicted for fringe benefits, and certainly not a corporation, he told the AP, adding, to be a crime, it would have to be for the benefit of the corporation with the knowledge of the corporation. They don't have the evidence at all. Even so, a point of intrigue is whether Weisselberg will remain loyal to the former president or turn informant, potentially testifying against Trump, the company's owner, his son Don Jr. and Eric, who are executive vice presidents, and his daughter Ivanka. Trump, beaten by Joe Biden in last November's election, has long sought to dismiss the investigation as a witch hunt and remains politically active. He returned to campaign rallies, intends to be heavily involved in the 2022 midterm elections, and could run for president again in 2024. But there are signs that the walls are closing in. Vance, investigating possibly extensive and protracted criminal conduct, has been scrutinizing Trump's tax records, subpoenaing documents and interviewing witnesses, including Trump insiders and company executives. A grand jury was recently empaneled to look at the evidence. Meanwhile, Letitia James, the New York State Attorney General, said she was assigning two lawyers to work with Vance on the criminal investigation while she continues her own civil investigation of Trump's business. James' office has been examining whether the Trump Organization inflated the values of some properties to obtain better terms on loans and lowered their values to obtain property tax breaks. Court records show some overlap between Vance and James' separate investigations, including their interest in Seven Springs, a 212-acre estate outside Manhattan that Trump purchased in 1995. James is examining a $21.1 million tax deduction taken when Trump agreed not to develop the property after local opposition thwarted his plan to build a golf course and a separate plan to build luxury homes was shelved. Trump has angrily denounced both investigations. In a statement released recently, he claimed the case was an extension of the Democrats' witch hunt against him. "They will do anything to stop the MAGA movement and me," he said, referring to the Make America Great Again campaign slogan, and insisting that the Trump Organization had merely done things that are standard practice throughout the U.S. business community and in no way a crime. The ex-president added, having politically motivated prosecutors, people who actually got elected because they will get Donald Trump, is a very dangerous thing for our country. In the end, people will not stand for it. Remember, if they can do it to me, they can do it to anyone, unquote. Trump's loss of power in Washington now deprives him, his family, and his company of legal protections he enjoyed while in the White House. The District of Columbia Attorney General's office, for example, is suing the Trump Organization and Presidential Inaugural Committee over the alleged misuse of more than $1 million for use of event space at the Trump Hotel in Washington during Trump's inauguration in January 2017. Ivanka, who was a senior advisor at the White House, sat for a deposition with investigators last December, but is in no imminent danger of criminal charges.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, "Let there be light," and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands. that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint,
a critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. A warm welcome to the program Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio. This is the movie critique program of the Viewpoint, and so far we have been talking about a couple of movies hovering around the concept of cloning with our dear guest Sayyid Abdullah and Brother Hussein. Brother Hussein, assalamu alaikum, welcome to the studio.
Alaikum salam, happy to be here.
Welcome. And Sayyid Abdullah.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah, thank you for having me.
You're welcome. Well, we've been talking about this fairly new phenomenon of cloning, and we had lots of movies about this, and we just chose a couple of movies. So far we talked about The Sixth Day in 2000, and also Godsend in 2004. And now let's focus on another movie, which is, in fact, fairly new movie, 2018, Andover. Of course, the release day was 2017, I guess. Well, but basically it was famously received, in fact, in 2018. It was directed by Scott Perlman. I didn't recognize any of the characters. They were not famous, but they played a good part, and they acted well. Well, the story is like this. A desperate genetic professor clones his wife over and over again until she is the perfect recreation of the woman he loved after her death. Because it happens that the professor loses his wife, and then he comes up with the idea and dares to clone his wife, all right? But sometimes within the process, some small details go wrong, and then he has to get away with the cloned wife, and then reclones his wife in this movie. Okay, Sayyid Abdullah, what is so important about this movie? What caught your attention about the message that this movie is trying to convey?
Well, first I have to say, if you get attached to your wife and there's this special bond between you and your wife and there's special love, and, you know, love obviously works on different levels, but some people, their whole existence rests around one person that they cannot enjoy anything unless that person's with them. Like, they go outside, they would wish their wives were with them, they eat something nice, they would, you know, would want their wives to be with them. So these partners, they become part of their life. Losing that partner to a lot of people is unbearable. Mm-hmm. They can't bear having lost a loved one, especially if it's a partner that they spent a lifetime together or a long time together. So they would, you know, they become desperate to find that love, because they know they're not going to find it elsewhere. And even if they might find it elsewhere, in the back of their mind, it could not replace what they had. It could even be better, you never know. But mm-hmm. they just don't want to risk that. Like, you know what? I'm yes. comfortable. It's their comfort zone. I want that love. I want that person because they understood me to a special level and we had this connection. I want that. So this movie trying to portray that kind of message where they're saying, you know what? What if me as a scientist, I had the ability to create my wife again mm-hmm. and have that love with her again? Because this is the whole aim of the movie now, leaving the science fiction aside, leaving science aside, leaving everything aside. He wanted that love. Mm-hmm. And at the end of the day, he did not get it. He got it somewhere else.
I see.
As life took place. So this would be the focal point of this whole movie, in my opinion.
I see. Let's take a break and we'll be back continuing our discussion on this movie, Andover.
I can't believe you made that.
That's
what I did. I love you. More than life itself.
So, how'd he propose?
You
married to a Dawn Slope?
I am.
There's been an accident.
I just wish I could say goodbye to her.
We all do.
I can't live without her.
Well, you can't live with her.
I guess God just couldn't wait to have her back. What if I told you we could have her back? I could clone her.
It's against nature.
Back to the program Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio. We were talking about the movie Andover, 2018 science fiction romantic comedy. Well, directed by Scott Perlman. Brother Hussein, Sayyid Abdullah was referring to a very important issue that, first of all, he was talking about love. And then it's too unbearable for some people, in fact, to accept a shock such as the loss of a dear one, all right? And we sometimes know that, you know, actually we learned it from psychology that some people are so much attached to those things that they belong to, they have a sense of belonging to those things, you know, and they don't want to let go, all right? And it seems that this is one of the messages of the movie, don't you agree?
Yeah, that is true. That is what the main character, the professor, that's what he is. He's too attached to his wife, and when she dies in that fire, he can't help but replace her. Mm-hmm. I mean, with her, by cloning her. Of course, then he runs into some problems, but that is his initial standpoint.
I see. The funny thing within that serious message that I found out was that life insurance adjuster isn't really too convinced about this, and he always feels that there is something fishy about this genetic professor and doesn't believe that the wife is dead yet. All right,
it wasn't very clear to me why he didn't believe, but yeah, that was quite humorous.
I see.
To me.
Okay. How about you, Sayyid Abdullah?
I think that the whole insurance auditor thing, I think that itself was another message of the movie, though. Mm-hmm. Because if you remember, he kills him and he makes a clone out of him and he brings him back to life. So this is the whole message of the movie itself. Maybe it had the cover of love and, you know, I want to bring my loved wife. But what if the possibility is there that, let's assume for argument's sake, you're a government official.
Mm-hmm.
And you came across sensitive information that you shouldn't have, or even just a normal person that you should came across something you shouldn't have. If the government can kill you, right, and reproduce you, make a clone out of you,
yes,
to the stage where you know everything except the fact where you were killed, mm-hmm. right, or why you were killed,
yes,
that is the, because he kills him, he brings him back to life, he gets him drunk, and then he calls the police,
yes,
right, he gets arrested. And what if that was a possibility? Right? So we can get rid of you,
yes,
as a person, and we could make another copy, yes, out of you, and yeah, no one would know.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
So that was like a hidden message within the message itself.
Mm-hmm.
That if we had this capacity, or if we had this capability of cloning people, even it might take us in the same way that took him so many trials to get his perfect wife, we might try, we mm-hmm. might succeed, but when we succeed, we have you by the neck,
mm-hmm.
right? That
yes,
you do something against us, we can get rid of you, we can replace you easily. So yes, that could be also a whole idea why this annoying insurance person was around.
Yes. But personally, I think the playwright or the director was somehow influenced by this proverb in English that says, nothing is certain except death and tax. It's somehow synonymous with each other. Like we have the death, of course, somehow annulled by the fact of cloning in this movie, and also